In Jewish history, as in most histories of any ancient and complex tradition, for every example of something, you can find a counterexample. It is very hard to say Judaism teaches something, because inevitably, somebody who either has sufficient knowledge of Judaism or access to an internet search engine will find an example of the reverse of that which Judaism teaches. Judaism is thought to be a tradition of law, but Hasidism was, in fact, in its origin, a rebellion against some of the legalism of Judaism. In a biting and representative story, the Kotzke Rebbe used to have his disciples pray not when Jewish law prescribed prayer, but whenever they felt like it. And when another rabbi took him to task, he said, "That's because in your town you have clocks, but in my town we have souls." So this idea that we can teach, which rabbis often do from the Torah portion, that Judaism says this, is invariably open to objection and to counterexample. And one of the nicest examples is in this morning's Parsha. It says that somebody who is going to give to the tabernacle, which was, after all, the major building fund of ancient times, should give asher yidvenu libo, which really means in the way that his heart moves him. And then, remarkably enough, having told people only to give as much as they are moved to give, the ancient Israelites give so much that at a certain point, Moses has to say, "That's all we can take." And so, you will hear from the commentators and from rabbis and from fundraisers in search of inspiration for generations that Judaism teaches that you should give according to how much you are moved in your heart. And therefore, we will tell you in as evocative terms as we can summon why the need is so great, so that your heart will be moved and you'll give. And this is invariably important, not only in terms of building institutions, which, after all, as much as we may not like it, are built in part with money, but in terms of feeding the poor, of taking care of those who are in trouble, of all sorts of relief funds. All these things are predicated in part on touching the heart of the person who will give. How many times have you opened a magazine and there is this pitiful and beautiful picture of a child, and you know that the picture is there because it is supposed to move you, as underneath it says, you know, you can give or you can turn the page. And that is, with a somewhat different twist and to a different end, it seems what Moses is doing here. but it contradicts much of the Jewish tradition. Because a lot of Judaism teaches that we don't really care how you feel about giving. We don't care if your heart is moved or not, although it's very nice if your heart is moved. Tzedakah in the Jewish tradition is mandatory. You gotta give. If you're moved, you give. If you're not moved, you give. Doesn't really matter. The idea of the tithe of 10% is biblical. And nobody was allowed to say in ancient Israel, I'm sorry, I would give 10%, but the truth is I'm not really moved to. It was what we would call today a tax. You can't say, I'm not really moved to give to the government because I don't like the roads that they build. You can cheat, but according to the law, it is irrelevant whether you pay your taxes happily, as we all do, or reluctantly. So what is this conflict about? And why does the Bible say this morning you should give according to how you feel? The first division, I think, although this is not entirely where I will end up, but the first division has to do with what it is you're building. It's one thing to give money to the tabernacle, which is, after all, representative of the people's devotion to God, and therefore was intended to create a certain feeling in the giver. It's important that when you give to the tabernacle, you feel moved, because after all, the tabernacle is there to move you. And if you give money to the tabernacle and every time you approach it, you feel miserable and cheated and angry, well then, your giving hasn't served its purpose. Because one of the mysteries of giving to an organization is, as much as the organization wants you, once you give, then you yourself feel tied to that cause. It's just like when you do a favor for someone. It's a strange thing, but when you do a favor for someone else, then they have a claim on you. There's a connection created. It's very different, though, when you have to give to somebody who's in trouble. Because if there is someone who is starving in the street, and you reluctantly and grudgingly and angrily give them money, they still eat. It doesn't matter that every time you see them, you don't like them because they took your money. They still eat. And so there is a difference in the idea of tzedakah between building that which is supposed to draw your heart, which is really for the giver, and giving money, which is really for the recipient. The Baal Shem Tov, in fact, says tzedakah is one of the very few mitzvot, one of the very few commandments, that you may perform with an ulterior motive, and it still counts. Maybe your motive was entirely to get rid of this pesky fundraiser who keeps ringing your doorbell. And that's the only reason you gave, so you never have to see him again. Still counts. Because the purpose of the mitzvah is to feed the hungry. It's not to make you feel good. And so in this morning's parsha, when it says, Vayikhu, and you shall take, it tells all the people that you have to take. Because everybody has to do it. And by the way, a beautiful little twist on this. One rabbi says, why does it say, Vayikhu lahem truma, you shall take donations, instead of you shall give donations? He said it proves that every member of the Jewish people should be a fundraiser. Because, says the rabbi, it is easier to give than to ask. And if you really care about a cause, then you gotta put yourself on the line by asking for that cause. That shows you care. Give somebody a buck, doesn't show you care. To ask someone for a dollar, though, then you're invested. You will see in part, those of you who are aware of it, where I'm going, of course, since tomorrow is Super Sunday. And on Super Sunday, what everybody is supposed to do is go to the Federation building and not just give money, but ask other people to give money, to get on the phones and say, please give. And of course, nobody likes to do that. But that's the mitzvah. To do more than just dismiss the obligation with a check, but actually to ask other people to participate. Now, having said that, and having spoken about the division between what you are building with your money as opposed to what you are accomplishing, and of course, when we're talking about Super Sunday, we are in fact talking about the second kind. We're talking about social services and feeding the hungry and taking care of those who are alone. And if you don't, by the way, believe that there are so many people in the Jewish community who are in need of these services, all I can tell you is you should sit in my office every week as you get calls and people coming who are alone, who are in trouble, who need food, who need money, who need a place to stay. In fact, the needs are significant. But there is a second division here, which I think is tremendously important and which was brought home to me by an article that I read just a week ago in this month's Atlantic magazine. It was all about a change in theories of child rearing. Last generation of experts on children, and every generation has experts on children, and it's always necessary, of course, that this generation's experts contradict the ones that you grew up with. That enables you to be angry at your parents. Because whatever they did and whoever they listened to was wrong. And you know better. Last generations insisted that what was important was to cultivate the child's heart. And to give them the space to express their desires in the same way, again, I'm tying this to you should give what it is your heart moves you to give. And in the course of such self-expression and validation and telling them how precious is their every whim and thought, you will create a child with enough sense of his or her own worth that they will naturally express things, emotions, propensities, characteristics that are loving and are good. The people who developed these theories have apparently never visited a playground. Because anyone who does realizes that, in fact, the natural expression of a child is not always loving and good. And that if it were, nobody would ever have to say to a child, share with your sister. Children would naturally share because they would want others to be as happy and as enriched as they are. So today's experts increasingly on child rearing are moving away from the tabernacle model because they believe that, in fact, overdoing that model, rather than creating a loving and sharing human being, actually just creates a monster of ego. And monsters of egos, thank God, we've got enough of. And they're moving towards you have to set very strict limits and boundaries and lay down the law. Because they are coming to a realization which, and I say this without any religious ego, Judaism has been teaching for thousands of years. Okay, a little bit. And that is that the law shapes the heart. That souls are shaped by being what we call civilized, but what Jewish law would teach becoming mitzvah observant. In fact, in the Talmud itself, the rabbis say that the mitzvot are given precisely to refine souls, which gives us a sense that souls are born needing refinement. And that things like tzedakah you must give because you must give, because it is an obligation and not because you want to, that shapes a giving person. It was true, incidentally, and not only in the Jewish community, in this country. When we talk about the great robber barons whose funds created, like Carnegie and Rockefeller, and all these men who at the end of their lives gave millions and millions and millions of dollars, significant shares of their fortune, they did it because they wanted to. There actually was no tax write-off for Rockefeller. He didn't gain by giving. Financially, he lost by giving. And he didn't give because Rockefeller was, in his heart, more generous than the people around him. He gave because he understood that to be an unrefusable moral obligation of someone of wealth. It wasn't an issue of being moved by the plight of the multitudes. It was, this is what you're supposed to do. John Jacob Astor, one of the richest men in the world in his age, went down on the Titanic. And the reason he went down was because he refused to get on a lifeboat because, as he said in the last words that anyone ever heard him say, a gentleman doesn't do that. He understood a certain code, and that code was a code of law. And that was and is how Judaism is intended to operate, which is to shape souls by legislation, by obligation, by the sense that this is not your choice. It may be your choice whether you give to the construction of this building, but it is not your choice whether you give to that person who is hungry. You have to do it, because that's what it means to be a Jew. So from the moment that we begin to raise our children, until the moment that we decide what to do with the money that we will leave behind us, Judaism insists that our first decisions be governed by law. Because it shapes your soul, and because ultimately shaping your soul is less important than feeding that child. So there is, in this Torah portion, a contradiction and a double message. That is, for certain things, it is essential that it grows and radiates from within you, that your heart be moved, that you understand that it is your relationship to other people and to God that compels you to give. But other times, the law pries open our reluctant hands and takes what we would otherwise not give for our own good, but even more for the good of the person who needs it. We are in the business, in our tradition, of shaping souls and also of seeking to improve the world. And that's why Judaism is and ought to be a training in enforced generosity, in giving because we must, in the hope that eventually we will give because we can't refrain from giving, because there is something inside of us that tells us that is our task and our destiny in this world. I hope that all of you will take the opportunity tomorrow, after being with us in the morning and hearing the fascinating discussion of fear in our society by Professor Barry Glassner that begins at 9:30, that you will join us for Super Sunday to give, to ask others to give, to help shape our own souls, and most important, to help make God's world a little closer to the way that God intends it to be. Shabbat Shalom. Let's give everyone a moment to come in and have a seat. As we turn to page 182 for Ein Kelohenu.